Blog Talk Radio.
Team of Voices presentation of Off the Rack. I'm your host, Rack and Tour. And here we are, alone again, together. Oh, my goodness. It's funny, all the permutations of openings and things and stories and recordings and everything else. It's like, you know, is this where I jump in? Is this where I jump in? Is this where I jump in? Ah, hell with it, I'm jumping in. Anyways, that worked out, I guess. I've got Pretty Bird on the line. Hi, Pretty Bird.
Well, hello. And we also have Miss Sky and Sweet.
Already?
Hello.
Hello, hello.
No,
we couldn't
hello.
Leave you guys alone together out there.
I don't think me and Sweet could have handled it alone.
Oh, well, yeah.
There's something about that word, that the idea of alone, because it's an emotion, but it's a state of being. So it gets very muddled and confusing. And you know, for me, it sometimes leads back to, you know, the things that we do to ourselves sometimes, because, you know, you could be in a crowd and still feel alone. And, you know... I know we're all familiar with that feeling. It's one of those things that just, you know, can send you off in 100 different directions. And it's really easy to just slide off into a tangent. I mean, You know, you want to say lonely, but lonely isn't being alone. It's not the same thing. And you know, being alone when there's no one there isn't the same thing as being alone, you know, when you know, you feel alone. And it gets very confusing. So I was a bit obtuse with tonight's topic. So I apologize in advance. So everything is on topic tonight. What can I do?
So I'm just going to butt in with a little word about our opening song, because I will forget. That was "I'm Tired of Being Alone." That is the version by Michael Grimm, who sung it on America's Got Talent, and it made it onto one of his albums. He did win America's Got Talent in 2010. He is one of my favorite, not my favorite AGT people, because I don't really watch the show. I just love that voice. And if you ever get a chance to listen to a song that he sings called "The Reason," it is my favorite of all things Michael Grimm. He's fabulous. So I would check him out if you have no clue who he is. He's kind of amazing. So, okay, continue.
I'm glad you had the trivia for that, because the closest I could come is Michael Grimm isn't Ben Grimm, for those of you who watch the Fantastic Four. So that's as close as I could come. You know, I hear Grimm. I should go Grimm's Fairy Tale, shouldn't I, Sky? But
yeah.
You know. Anyways, what kind of a writer are you? You don't go Grimm's Fairy Tales. I mean, seriously. And I'm a comic book nerd. I grew up in a different era, you know. I found Grimm's Fairy Tales eventually, but, you know, I grew up with the little cartoon squares and comic strips. And at one point in my life, that's what I wanted to do for a living. I wanted to draw those things. And then, you know, that term starving artist nagged at me, and I'm like, nope, ain't going to happen. I want to make money. I want to live. So, you know. And you know, like everything, I think you got to know someone to be able to get into that business. There was a lot of giants when I grew up in the comic book world in particular that were very, you know, talented and amazing. not discounting the man that drew Ben Grimm and the Fantastic Four. I think that was Jack Kirby. He was an incredible comic book artist, but you know, Lee's world of superheroes was kind of marvelous. Anyways, so here we are alone together. You know, I don't know where else to go with that feeling that sometimes overcomes some people, you know, and again, to me, it kind of goes back to, you know, some of the things that we do to ourselves, that you know, the phrase or the thought of, you know, I come here to be alone, you know, as in, you know, being here on Blog Talk or whatever. When you know, you read a poem, or when you hear a poem, and you sit there and you say, well, this is how it struck me, and you're the only one sitting there saying that, it's like, well, I guess I'm alone in that thought, you know. And you know, it, you isolate yourself sometimes, and I don't know, my brain is broken, so, or at least it's not on, it's on crooked anyway. So here's where we at. You guys got time constraints, Sweet, or Sky? You guys want to get to bed?
I do. I'm here till about 8:45, but I've got to finish my phone.
We can catch you up.
Ooh.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay.
That's a notification. Yes.
Really?
I at the moment, I am working at double Saturdays, Sundays, and Friday nights, so I have 4 days off, 3 days on, to summer vacation. So I am.
Since you're going into what you got on the schedule, you want to push any shows?
Oh, okay. I wasn't ready for that. What am I doing? Oh yeah, I know what I'm doing. 8:00 on Thursday night. Storyboards on a poetic slice of life. We are celebrating the film 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. The film But I also have, of course, this time I have the quotes from the book by Jules Verne, and I just reread it this year, so I thought I would do it. And you could write any of the themes, scenes, characters, and or quotes. You can go anywhere you want, even if off topic from the topic itself, which means you don't need to read the book or watch the movie. You could quote and do whatever you want with it. And I will bring the fandom, or you can write about Captain Nemo. Knock yourself out.
Do a deep dive.
There you go.
And then since you mentioned Thursday, I know we have someone else here that's going to be on after you on Thursday, unless, you know, another person.
No, not until July. That won't be until July.
That won't be until?
July 6th.
July 6th, okay.
Yeah, I'm not on this week. I'll be in Wyoming. But I will say that Sky has a subject coming up called 23. So if you have not seen the movie.
Oh, that's not me, but Poetic Slice does, yes.
Poetic Slice has the same season. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm just saying I'm very excited about 23.
that's Wednesday night. Yeah, that's tomorrow night, actually, on the mortuary that's on Wednesday. And the movie 23, yeah, with
Jim Carrey. Yeah. Yeah, I just watch that movie. It's psychotic. But, yeah, that's very exciting. I'm just saying. Sorry, I'm pimping another show, but 23 is very exciting.
No, that's fine. You know, pimp whatever you need or whatever intrigues you. It's to me, you know, the discussion, the opinion it's not exclusive to a team of voices, which is brought to us by the A.P. Taylor Foundation. I'd like to mention that earlier. So here we are. Anyways, 23 is not brought to us by A.P. Taylor. It's out there.
No.
It comes with very strong recommendation from somebody who knows her psychosis.
It's funny because my brain is still stuck on the Brothers Grimm, and I'm just sitting there going, well, that's because Disney kind of is the king of all bastardizing stories. I mean, I love Disney, and I love princesses, but I was raised on Disney since I, you know, grew up in Florida. And the first time I read Cinderella, I was like, no, they didn't. And so then, of course, I was hooked because they're gruesome and fabulous.
The first time I saw the TV version, I think it was the TV version, when they were running around with the bow and the crossbow and everything, and it wasn't the same story. I was like, you know, I was so enthralled. I was like, you know, it's so not the stories that I'm used to. It was great. I really fell in love with that stuff. I think it was on Netflix that I saw the Brothers Grimm. I don't remember if it was a series or not. I think it was. But,
The Grimm. But my fourth grade teacher. I mean, like the first real book that I read on my own, it wasn't like really read like a chapter book. I think I was in fourth grade, and it was a Roald Dahl book. You know, what was it? The Fantastic Mr. Fox. But shortly after that, I read a couple of him, and that was when I first started getting in. But my fourth grade teacher gave me. She was going to Germany, and she gave me a junior library edition of the Grimm Brothers, and from then on, I was hooked on reading after that book. So, my godson, I read him the story of Cinderella before he watched the film, and he's like, "Where are the hot coals that she's supposed to be dancing and dying in?" And he was real little. I scarred you so young. Or I taught you well, depending on who you are.
You gotta wonder what kind of twisted mind Disney will take something so gruesome and be like, this will make a great kid story. And then, you know, I'm like, who goes there? That's crazy.
Well,
first off, Stinky always kills the mother, so they're always sick and twisted.
Well, in the original Grimm's, so I read a couple years ago the original unaltered Grimm Brothers, like from 1809, and the thing is that the over 60 years they re-edited, but all the mothers were really the real mothers. But then at some point they wanted to preserve motherhood, so they started making it the stepmother. But if you look at the original stories that they took, like, through word of mouth and they just put together the first, I mean, because they weren't their stories, right? So they had all different country stories and they had word of mouth back then, and then they put them all together. Maybe it was 1708. I can't remember what it was. And I don't even think that's right. I have to look at the date. But the original one, they just put them all together, and they're very, very different. They're, like, all sections of each story, like, Beauty and the Beast is actually The Winter and the Summer Garden, and they took that story, but then they connected it with a different story, and they put them together, and then you got Beauty and the Beast. And so if you get a chance to read that version that just came out a couple years ago, like, or not just came out, but republished into one bound book, it is brilliant. Sorry.
Study program. What homework?
It's not homework. It's really good. It's really good.
And so speaking of who's going to look at that story and say that's a good children's story, I'm going to hand the microphone to Sweet Pea so that she doesn't get stranded here.
Yeah, I have like 12 poems on loneliness because there's something wrong with me.
You're normal?
So.
Yeah, I think you're just like the rest of us. So.
Oh, do I get to pick 1 through 12? Rack should pick 1 through 12. Pick a number, see which one you read. No?
Okay, you pick 1 through 12. Go ahead.
8. Yeah. 8 something.
Okay, here we go. You picked it, not me.
Leave my nose out of this.
Okay. All right, Rex. Oh, yeah.
Could be my belly button on my ear, too. Don't let me expound on that. Don't give me open air time.
All right. Sorry, guys. I'm putting it up here. Here we go. Felt disappeared. I faded. Into the shadows of ebony, vanished from your memory. You playing pretend in another life, you fading as a lover and a wife. That scream profanity, body shakes, fears, begging for attention, shivering in fear. You seek no shine in once weird eyes, your softness for safety and touch of spirit, mind. Which do not embrace passion's unbridled kiss, fear glances of desire no longer wish, mild sunshine through gaze, burning venom through the pain, heart shattered by promises disappear, hope seeks you and break, it's too long.
Yeah, I hate your microphone. I don't know about you guys, you had a hard time.
Hold on, let me shut that off and I'll read it so you can hear me.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I'm wearing my new headset, so.
I heard you say a mother and a wife, and you know, I'm always drawn into the way that you write and your storyline, but.
All right. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Is that better? All right.
Yeah.
So this is disappeared. I stayed into the shadows of ebony. Vanished from your memory. You playing pretend in another life. Me fading as a lover and wife. Lips scream profanity, body shake. Tears begging for attention. Shivering in fear. Beauty seeks no shine in once mirrored eyes. No softness or safety in a touch of hand to mine. Lips do not embrace passion's unbridled kiss. Fevered glances of desire no longer wished. Smiled sunshine through the gaze, bled venom through the pain. heart shattered by promises disappeared, rope from ceiling breaks, would you see me lying there and cold?
Wow. I'm so glad you reread it because it totally, I mean, the opening verse is me. You know, to start with that transition with where you wound up and the explanation of how you got there, to me, totally tells a story like this, and through the emotions. It really drives what the point that you're making. It's never mind. Thank you. Pretty Bird.
Yeah.
Can you comment for Sweet?
I suppose I could do that. I love how you are not telling us what it's like to feel. You're not telling us what things should be. You're not describing to us a like generalization of loneliness. You are telling us what the stabbing feels like. You are telling us the desolation. You are pulling us into the emotion that if anybody has ever even remotely felt it, which we all have, because, you know, you're human, it pulls you in to what you know that to be. And so it reflects our own experience through your experience, as horrible as it is. And I find magic in that. And it is heartbreaking.
Yeah. Still there, Sweet? Sky, can you comment for Sweetie?
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I this topic, Rack, you're always going into the... You and Sweet always go into those dark elements of emotion, which is beautiful, even though it is, you know, it is on the sadder side. And for me, I think the... You know, this beauty seeks no shine, and once mirrored eyes, no softness or safety in touch of hand to mine. I think that the once mirrored eyes, you know, something there and then you expect it to be there, and then all of a sudden it fades to nothing. I mean, it's more heartbreaking. I mean, because you're building trust, you're building something there, and when you see that fade, it's almost like you didn't know that there was a loneliness before. And a lot of times that's kind of what happens, like a part of you starts to ache that maybe was dormant or was healed or okay at that point until this happened again or for the first time. So I think that stanza was particularly one of my favorite parts. Really well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like that she mentions that what you just put up, because you're talking about being alone, but you're talking about someone touching your hand. It almost feels contradictory, but it's not. It really isn't, because you know they're not there, even though. Yeah, it makes total. I love it. It makes too much sense. thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Now that we've brought the house down.
Well, because loneliness is going to keep bringing that house up. Right? Yeah.
Which one did I put up pretty good? Was it Desolation?
It is.
You could do mine next.
All right, pick a reader.
There's no stop.
No.
Oh boy. Well, Sky's got a preview. She does it. I know your eyes are bad.
No, I've been practicing. Who is it?
It's Desolation by Me.
By you wrote it?
Yes.
Yeah. I'll read it. I've been practicing my reading aloud. I got it. As long as some people are a little bit skeptical, some of the things. This is Desolation by Raconteur. Somebody's out there, somewhere, waiting. Or so I've been told. The passage of time obliterating possible connections before they unfold. Playing blind man's bluff. Seeking what's right under your nose. Air permeated with indole-raking, reeking. As hope continues to decompose. Breath ragged in my chest. Unable to fill my lungs. My body struggling in protest. Defiant, even after it succumbs. Life flashing before my eyes. Terrified, the end is near. Nobody will hear my cry. Nobody sheds a single tear. Bankrupt from spending life alone, leaving nobody behind to care. Embodying the emptiness I've known, I vanish into thin air. End quote. I slowed down towards the middle, sorry. I'm like trying to get your rhythm.
Yeah.
You have a slow rhythm, which is good. I like that. It's an excellent poem. I'll wait for my turn, I promise.
You did a fabulous job reading that, I must say, especially for reading off the cuff. And so go ahead, make first comment.
Oh, and you say hi to Hatter.
Well,
hi, Hatter.
Hey.
It's my Hurt Locker.
Unmuted. Hey, guys.
Hi. So I feel like your voice, I was all like, I've been practicing reading, but I should have, like, done your little voice. But I think even without your you have, like, a somber voice when you read these, a very somber tone. But I have to say, even without your somber tone, just the words alone are enough. You know, breath ragged in my chest, unable to fill my lungs, that inability to gasp air, to breathe, and suffocating. I mean, what do you need to live? What is the you need breath? And I think, you know, there's so many things that are linked to that. And if you don't have something that is so essential to your being and to being alive, what do you have? You have death, you know, and it is a dying of something, especially when you feel like you're alone. Because where is life? Where is the where is the will, really? In this part too, I really loved the stanza. I mean, the whole piece was wonderful, but these two stanzas I think were stood out. Was the when you started speaking of the air permeated and indole reeking, and I hope. As hope continues to decompose, you know, it's not just gone, it's getting worse, it's decomposing, it's just, you know, it's very sad. And then the way that you wrote the lines, of course, and then when you write playing blind man's bluff, comma, seeking that pace, you're still searching for, you know, you're still searching for that hope, and it keeps slipping away. Really well done. The Hurt Locker, always incredible. Yeah, that Hurt Locker. Excellent.
And we have a caller, 727. Who's calling, please?
This is a Grass Man. How you doing?
Hi, Grass. How you doing? It's been a while.
The lonely thing caught me this afternoon when I was at work. I saw that it was going to be about lonely. Unfortunately, that's what I write most of my poetry about, unfortunately.
Well, not really. Well, if you purge, then you're not holding on to it so tight, so it's a good thing.
So that was a very good poem. I love the composition. I love the rhyming. And we all have life choices that are all encompassing, right? Sometimes we make the wrong decision when it comes to love, and it comes back and bites us in the ass, and then we permeate, we think about it, and we keep on hoping that we'll find that one that will make us whole. And I feel that in the poem. It was really well. I like the first part of it, which was, you know, where he talked about playing blind man's bluff, seeking what's right under my nose. In other words, it probably could have been somebody that was there for him that he didn't see it at the time. And then it permeated with this indulged wrecking as hope continues to decompose. And then after he could maybe do something about it, it's already gone. And I know those words. It's the soul and the seeking of somebody that gets you. And when you lose that, it's all encompassed. And so that was a good one. Good job.
Awesome, man. And CP, you're coming.
This is more than just a hurt locker. It's more like a devastation locker. I mean, bankrupt and spending life alone, leaving nobody behind to care, embodying the emptiness I've known, I vanish into thin air. You know, I hope and pray that that doesn't happen to anyone. And I've had a lot of death around me, and luckily and blessedly, every one of them has been surrounded by love. And I really hope that I have the same thing when I finally go, and that love is surrounding everyone I know. I thought this was sad, and hopefully it puts us in a perspective that when we have love, we know what it is, and we can appreciate it and embrace it. And that when you love the people that you love, that they can love and appreciate you for who you are. And if you're not happy, you can move on and you can find someone who you truly love. And if you're not with someone that does make you happy, you let them go so they can find love and appreciate that too. I think there's a lot of lessons in this poem. And I hope everybody can understand them. I think it was brilliant, Raph.
Well, thank you, sweetie.
And Hatter, your thoughts?
Big Russ. I was on hold, and it was so sad I wanted to almost hung up.
Oh.
It gave me a cry. I like the part about the way you put up breathing. I'm able to fill my lungs. My
thanks,
job.
And now it's my turn. First, indole is like my favorite of all stinky words because it is literally the stink of poo, and it emanates from all kinds of acrid things, but there's something so comforting in it that they put it in perfume, and they put it in all kinds of stuff because just enough so that you can sense it, but you can't really smell it because there's something comforting in the scent, believe it or not. That, you know, your daily trivia, you're welcome. Okay, you know, things you will never forget. Okay, other than that, your use of the word is brilliant as the smell of rot, of the rot of hope, because hope is a dangerous, dangerous thing. I mean, this whole hope springs eternal, you know, whatever you want to call it, is fabulous, because sometimes that's all that gets you through. But when it's all that for so long, it does not sustain you. It devastates you, you know, and it makes you feel worthless when so much time has passed hoping and hoping and hoping for something that just doesn't happen no matter what you do. And that's exactly what it feels like. From the beginning, from, you know, somebody's out there somewhere waiting, well, or so I've been told, because it hasn't happened yet, so, you know, people suck. And with every passing moment, you know, you can eat yourself alive, waiting and wondering if they're waiting and where are they, and maybe I already met them. Maybe I was all pissed off that day, or I turned left on that corner. And, you know, because when you are alone, your mind goes to all the possibilities of where you might have gone wrong, even if you didn't do anything. And and it's painful, like every single word of this poem. So, excellent, 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 Rack. And back to you.
Thanks. Thank you, pretty bird. Did you bring presents, Hatter?
If you said Hatter, yes, I did. I actually did.
Did you want to read next? Do you have time, Gress? Do you need to read and run?
No, I'm good. I mean, doesn't have
okay.
to be right now.
Because I jumped right on Hatter, so I just want to make sure I'm not leaving you twisted in the wind.
Okay.
So Hatter, did you want to read next?
Yeah, I will. See ya.
Bye.
Bye. Roommate's leaving right now. Okay. Yeah, I cannot remember feeling like this. I cannot remember feeling like this, like it was old, when I was older than I am now. Simple things turn memories. I stop and wonder how. I wished you happy. It seemed to fit where was I before you changed the best of it. Cloudy days I walked alone down the boulevard. Come along, it won't take long. It isn't very far. Place we met, we need to be, so I don't wonder why. Speak of things like offerings and tell me it's goodbye. The moment.
Oh, wow. Yeah, the memory plays strange tricks on us, like the whole idea of the rose-colored glasses and whatnot. And I like, you know, that you don't remember feeling like as I grew older. Or you put it in a way that made it was a little twisted, but it made complete sense. And you know, I love things like that because it's one of those things where like you have to slow down and think about exactly what you said, and it forces you to listen and concentrate on exactly what you're talking about. And that's the kind of thought that you know this topic demands because you know. When you talk about loneliness and being,
justifying how you feel now because of you survived it before, but that's not now.
Right. Yeah.
Can't have that one.
Yeah. And you know that other expression, like knowledge may vary. You know, experience may be with the other person, but. Yeah, you were there in that moment, and they weren't, and you know, analyze it, and how could I have been do that by myself? It hits you the same. Well, it should have. I don't know why it didn't.
I tried to change that cliche line down the boulevard, but I just ran out of time. Very cliche. I tried not to use it. But
no, I liked it. I liked it a lot, actually. What'd you think, Gress?
I kind of think that we have this love that we had in the past, and yeah, he'd like to have her back, but he sees her in a happy place than she ever could be with him. So he had that love for her, and maybe he's happy that she's in a better place than he could ever have given her. And that makes him feel good because it's a bittersweet thing when you see somebody you love doing really well. It's a shame that you think, hey, maybe I could have been there, or I could have been the guy, or something could have happened, and maybe we could have been there together. But in the end of it, when you love somebody, it doesn't matter. As long as you see them happy in life, that's okay, too. So, good job. I liked it. Really well. Kind of got reminiscing.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
Excellent. And, Sweet, I know you're getting ready to go, so...
The Sweet left.
She didn't hang up.
She had to go.
Oh, she did drop. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Guy, can you tell me what you had?
Yes, I thought it was an excellent. And by the way, Heather, I love the picture you sent me of the mechanical sun. I really appreciate it. It's fabulous.
Did it work?
You know, it's fine. I thought it was great. But on this poem, the cloudy days I walk alone down the boulevard, came along, it won't take long, it isn't very far. It feels like you're still, not you, but the, you know, the speaker in the poem is still going through this motion. And I think, you know, having things, you know, the thing about heartbreak is that you can hear, just like any type of thing that you have to recover from, just because the fact that you've recovered from it once doesn't mean you might need to recover from it again. And I think that's what ends up happening, you know. You have to heal and then re-heal and then it, you know, breaks open again and then you got to put it away. And that's what I see in this poem. And all the while, you know, where you because you loved the person at one point, there's a part of you that, you know, wants them to be happy, and there's also the part that you're like, you know, you want them back, and then there's another part that says, stay away. I've already recovered from this. And I see all these feelings, all these contradicting feelings that I think a lot of people go through. I see that in this poem, but in some of the lines. Really well done.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And you're next, pretty bird.
I saw your opener. I cannot remember feeling like this when I was older than I am now. I love the twist in that because sometimes you think of things you said or felt or did, and you were wise when what you are now, and by you, I mean me, when you look back at things and you're like, well, what did I do? And I should have done this. And I tend to throw more of a quiet interpersonal mental tantrum of my idiocy when, in fact, it was, you know, wiser. So I love that I kind of took that to mean, you know, thought patterns of behavior where I was wise and kind, but now I'm in pain and screw your happiness because you know, maybe it's just me. But
was Buffalo Springfield. Remember, I was so much younger than I'm old. I was so much older than I'm younger than that now.
What song was that?
Was it Buffalo Springfield? Was it Buffalo Springfield or the Birds?
I don't remember.
I think it's the Birds. I was so much older then, but I'm younger than that now. I think that was.
Crosby, Stills, Nash. It's Crosby, Stills, Nash or Buffalo Springfield, I think. But
I was older than I was than I thought I was, or something like that. But twice as young as tomorrow.
I think that's a different song.
Yeah, I still like it though.
The music and its lyrics, Pretty Bird will tell you, my mind does that all the time. I'll twist them into the conversation. I'll be like, it's nothing like what was written, but you know that's what I'm remembering now. Damn you. Yes, it's so much older than, but I'm younger than that now, I think was, I was older than, but I'm younger than that now. Anyway.
He's with the Birds. Yeah. I don't know.
We're getting old, Heather. We used to be able to get that off the
tip of our tongue. I used to know that.
You used to know all these songs.
Did you want to read next, Sky?
Yeah, that's fine. I can do it. Do you want me to get my own prompt, or are you guys going for that?
Well, I was asking Sky if she wanted to read next because she called earlier. So
I'm still trying to pick out a poem for you, Rack. So
okay.
So I will give you one. I'm still trying to pick one up.
Okay, not a problem.
You want me to pick Greta?
All right. Yeah, Gref, yeah.
Okay, you're on the board.
All right. This is called Pity the Fool. Okay, so here we go. Loneliness pulled back the covers, and I shuddered from the cold. No lick of relief as I pound the pillow. Light creeps through, splashing me in today. The bathroom mirror is unkind and shows my eyes as wounds, framing a face with worry. Another day goes by without shaving, knuckles forming to punch at the hate that wears my face. I'm caught in obligation, tedious echoes of life that has never lived, and dreams that hate figments. Days turn to weeks, weeks to years. I continue to fantasize about a love that will never hold me, share warmth, envelop me, make me whole. As age sets in, I am nothing more than a job with a place to go. A paycheck to sustain stupidity, checking the other box on the payment plan, hacking my thoughts in pixels. It's easy for others to give advice, do this, don't do that. You need to stop working two jobs. But I continue, not because I love what I do, but because it fills the day. She keeps me busy from being all alone. My body and mind are breaking. As I drone on, the crash will happen. Rubbernecks will slow down to view, slowing down others for only minute minutes. Jeez, that's a bad one, Martha, said nobody.
Wow. You know, I like the routine in the beginning, you know, the idea of you know, you're forgetting your own personal hygiene, and you're looking in the mirror and you don't like what you see, so you stop looking in the mirror, you're not shaving, you know, you're not taking care of yourself, which is very, you know, common, at least I think it is, you know, when you talk about these kinds of feelings of isolation and you know, pointlessness. You know, it's like, why bother? You know, who the hell do I have to impress? You know, it's like, or the more deadly, who gives a shit what anyone else thinks, really? You know, it's like, I don't care. You know, and it's that lack of caring, I think, that everything kind of flows down the drain. You captured that wonderfully. I really appreciated this. Sky, what'd you think?
Can you come back to me, Rack? I'm sorry. I'm usually not.
No, that's all right.
Thank
that's
you.
All right. Hatter, can you comment for Gref?
Yeah, I could relate to part of this, I'm afraid. Body and mind are breaking. Yeah, it's I like also the rubbernecker slowing down with slow down to see the wreck you are.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's very good. Nice job, man.
That's the way I feel sometimes, my finger. It's just like you get tired.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you let yourself go and you know you should be better, but you're just going with the paces. You don't really, each day becomes more and more, and you don't, you know you could do better. You know you could have a better life, but you just continue to live on like you don't care about yourself. And that's not something somebody should ever do, but it happens. You know, we all get depressed, and we all find that's why I said pity the fool, because there should be no pity. I'm for thinking these things, doing these things.
There's a thought attached to that too, at least in my mind. You know, if you don't care about yourself, why would anyone else? You know, and I think that gets lost on some people. Because, you know, again, there's that rabbit hole that you're describing of depression that you're falling into, and loneliness.
Yep.
Pretty Bird, can you comment?
Yeah, I am like going to be like just the queen of unpopular opinion, because the other side of what you just said is like, if you don't care about, you know, yourself, you know, why would anybody else? You sound like my mother. So thanks for the trigger, by the way. But the thing is, you shouldn't have to try to impress anybody. You shouldn't have to always look your best or always be your best or always whatever I'm finger quoting best because you can't see me waving my fingers in my face. People should love you for you regardless, fresh and through this and through that. So I just, you know, things irk me. I apologize. So this poem. There is a way you word things. The bathroom mirror is unkind and shows my eyes at wounds. That is glorious. That is real, and that is very, very familiar. And it's not just that they're dark circles and you know, it looks like you got punched in the face because you're so tired and whatever. It's, you know, that whole windows or eyes are the windows to the soul. And when you feel hollow, it shows. And I love, love, love that phrase. And the end of that very stanza, you know, the knuckles forming to punch at the hate that wears my face. Love that. That is about the best description of self-loathing that I have heard or read visually. I find it to be fabulous. And again, because it's true, because you know, in these moments when we are not our, you know, who we thought we were or who we want to be, and we just, those moments, everything, all that we can see are all the things that we want to change, all the things that are subpar. And some days we just can't do anything about it. It takes too much energy to be bothered, because that's what depression does. It is unkind and unfortunate, and it is a universal thing. I love this. Because you're welcome. Because it's very, very painful. And it depicts loneliness beautifully, you know. And while this is lonely and alone, the whole working two jobs and working for a paycheck and you go home just to go back to work, just to be able to afford the car to go home and all of that stuff, that happens with or without a house full of people. And it's very isolating because, you know, even in today's society, it's still not a polite thing to discuss, you know. And so you don't ever want to say, well, I feel like I'm, you know, failing at love or in relationships or in friendships, or I'm feeling a little unbalanced, not so much mentally, just overall in life, because we tend to focus at one thing at a time. And it gets us in this rut that we can't climb out of because we didn't realize we were running that same path, and now we're so deep we can't see the sky, you know? And that just kind of, that's what that felt like to me. And every word of the days that turned to weeks, to months, to years, and this is where you find yourself. And to this, I am going to say one more thing, because I have always hated the idea of do your best or look your best or whatever your best. It drives me nuts because we could only do what we can do. We cannot judge ourselves on our best days, just like we need to stop judging ourselves by our worst days. We are neither of those people. And quite frankly, some days the best we can do is get out of bed at all. And if that's the best you can do that day, it's good enough. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Just getting another day, that's it. It's just, it, you know, you just got to, sometimes you know you have all this baggage on you, but you still, you got to get out of bed and do it. You know, you can't.
I think part of the point that you make is you may be telling yourself you could do better, but you know, who who are we to say that, that you can do better, you know? Only you know. I completely mutilated what I was trying to say, but yeah, the idea of, you know, trying to do better, it's like, well, right now this is the best I could do. Deal with it, you know?
Exactly. You know, it's funny. My mother was, you can't go to work looking sick. You can't go to school looking sick. You can't go out looking sick. So to this day, when I'm feeling the worst, I tend to look better because I go to do the effort of putting on, like, actual makeup. I don't wear that much makeup on a regular basis. And I was like, oh, my gosh, you look so great. Yeah, I'm dying. You know, so don't let the blush fool you. But, you get used to things. Years of your life, you get spent that way, being told off or looking like crap, that it's, and now it's just habit, you know? It's a shame.
Yeah. I appreciate you guys. It's good that I'm glad that
you got one more comment? One more comment from Sky.
Yes, I'm very sorry. I had to step away, but I got it. I'm all caught up now. I thought this was a really great piece. And I think, you know, reading through it, sometimes, you know, working or substituting something, you know, it is a little bit of a deflection. It is a little bit of filling your time so you don't feel that so intensive of pushing it off. I dare say sometimes it could almost be a bit of a good thing to kind of keep your mind going at least for a bit. But you're right, there is always going to be a crash. But, you know, the thing is that when you say everybody has advice, I think that everybody means well, and sometimes a person knows what's best for them. Sometimes they don't see themselves crashing. It's a really fine line to walk. And I don't think advice given, you should do this, you should do this, ever really works. You know, self-seeking questions to another person. You know.
Yeah,
you know,
I have.
Why
a
do
very
you think?
Complex,
why do you think? I'm sorry.
I have a very complex living thing. I've been working two jobs since I was 20 years old, and I'm 61 now. So it's been a routine, and just getting to that point where I don't know if it's just because I want to or because have to or any of those things, you know what I mean?
Yeah. and I think that only you can answer that, you know. I think that, you know, and if someone, anybody who's in it, like, because I tend to work in an encumbersome amount and tend to fill my time, but I enjoy that filling of time, unlike most people. But I also make sure I take that downtime, and some of that fill time is things that I like. So, you know, maybe that second job is filling it with a second hobby instead, or finding something that, you know, is maybe, you know, creating it, you know, putting more time into poetry or doing whatever. And the thing is that I don't think anybody can really answer that question but the person themselves. You know, I think it is definitely a self-seeking and self-measuring that needs to happen, especially in the want to, because somebody can tell you something till you blue in the face. You're not gonna change or believe it until you buy into it yourself. So, but this piece,
right,
it was definitely complex and written well. The knuckles foaming to the punch. I particularly liked some of these describing frames of emotion in this, I think, in a second stanza. And then the kind of wavering, is it for a need or a want? Like, where do we go from here? So, sometimes things can fill in loneliness. I do agree. Really well done.
Did I get Hatta? Did he drop?
Had or dropped?
Yeah, it dropped.
Oh, okay. Unmuted.
So we have Pee-wee and Angel that need readers. Titus has a SoundCloud, and then Sky and me. And Deb. But you were waiting for Deb because she shows up, right?
Pee-wee doesn't have a sound class?
No.
All right. Well, let's be tight.
Let's be tight. Okay. Titus is on the board, but I have to refresh my stuff because I had the nerve to change the opening music, and now I can't see anything. Here it is. Okay. All right. Here we go.
Forever and a day I sit to secure my position in the laps of the gods. Hardship has promised the never-ending story. A boy who sees and speaks the love that prods conscious, unsuspecting hearts, pain, the glory, which to love has secured a silence. It brings uncanny resemblance to a world I live, a past, present, and a future. Was it Euphusium sings about the songs of long ago, and so downcast mutism provides a wild, yet ill-lamented chair, where I am sat until it was a grandfather smiled, spake of nature walks as if it were godly care, given the air of sophistication for this child, fern and flame were to explain this milestone, was that to be the millstone around my neck, work holds nothing other than a time I bemoan, the hurt others feel it seems I do cross-check, reaching out to the ebony, the wound for whom sin is believing, a parchment will be found, like a mushroom. Without the doom or gloom, the throne I sit holds a moral virtue, sound patience. My love, it consists of a sugar sweet sincerity. The gods do speak, oh yes, it is a wine. To toast their patience, it is a secret so discreet. You'd think so divinely angelic love was thine.
Wow. I don't know. Titus just has that way about him. That opening expression, I love, you know, forever and a day. It's like, you know, when you're younger, you know, trying to infinity plus one. that thought is kind of obsessive. His choice of words and speech patterns fit well with the topics that he writes about. He tells a story in a way that just fits so beautifully. And to put it in terms of I guess time. You know, it reminds me anyway of, you know, how someone could be there 1 minute and gone the next, you know, regardless of what you're going through. I don't know. I'm all over the map with this. This is lovely. Pretty Bird, what'd you think?
Well, it's Titus, and it's a sonnet, and so I am, you know, enthralled and just ensorcelled as always. There's a lot in this. Forever and a day I sit to secure my position in the laps of the gods. Hardship has promised a never-ending story. You know, and you know, a boy who sees and speaks a love that prods conscious, unsuspecting hearts and pains the glory to which love has secured his silence. How much and how long must we suffer alone without love for whatever reason? And in this pain, do we even secure a spot in the afterlife for all we have suffered on this earth? I don't know. But, you know, there's something to be said. I get a feeling of youngness and first broken heart and where you think it's the end of the world and I could never love another. And and you know, and I mean, how often when we're young do we think that once our heart is truly broken, like devastatingly broken, do we think that we can never love anyone ever? That our love is gone, that that was my one chance at love, and that's what this feels like. Like there is no choice but to suffer and suffer in silence, because that's what we must do. That is the price of love. And that's what that feels like to me. And I wish I could say it wasn't true. You know, I wish I could say as we get older, we learn. And I don't think that we do. I think that every time our heart is truly broken, we go through those moments of mourning as well. We should, because we cannot get past it without going through it. But especially empathetic people, those of us who tend to be more creative, i.e. poets, who are more in tune with identifying our emotions, because, you know, we write them down, it doesn't ever go away, you know? I can think of 10 years ago. I can think of when I was 12 years old. I can think of all of these moments of heartbreak. And if I actually ponder them for more than an instant, it might as well just happen. It doesn't go away. You know?
You go back.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, we weigh them against the grander things in life and the things we have to do and the things that we have lived, and we understand their place better as an adult, but heartbreak, it doesn't actually stop hurting, you know?
Yeah, I think that goes to the growth there. I say all the time about, you know,
you are breaking up.
I think it goes back to what you had said earlier about, you know, putting it on paper so you don't have to cast it. That's why you're able to go back there, because it's sitting there right there in front of you. You know, it's like when you know, when I talk or something and someone says they can't do it. One hand I cringe because I don't want another. Okay, at least I'm making sense. And wonderful feast. Is Greg still with us?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Can you comment for Titus?
Oh, my God. It's like, I don't even know where to begin on this. It's like an epic journey here between when you're younger and you get older. And I just thought it was full of compassion and caring, and then wounded at the same time. I find this beauty in the composition, depth. There's so much depth to that, that there's like seven different layers, and each one that you're trying to like unravel to understand it a little bit more. I mean, to me, I'd have to read this like four or five times, because each half I get into it, I've read it three times already, and each time I really like the depth of it, because, I mean, when you word stuff like, I use clocks that searching out to ebony, the womb for whom seeing is believing, and parchment is found. And then, you know, parchment is a look for law, for things that were put down to be written and to everybody to understand. So it's just so much level of layers in this epic poem. It's really well done. I have to say that I'm a big fan of his, and every time I see anything he writes, it's well done. So great job on that, Tyler. If you hear him, and I appreciate your poetry. Really well done.
And Sky.
Yeah, I this is just an excellent piece, and it's kind of like going in different directions when I was reading it. And I love the idea, and this is just how I interpreted it. I don't know, you know, if this is the actual where he was going with this, but the way I see it, you know, this generational pull, where the boy who's seeking, you know, first of all, I love the promise of the never-ending story, because I'm a big Michael N. fan, And that story could have, for me, I think he should have wrote like 1,700 more stories from that book. But, you know, the idea of one has to go through all these hardships and pain, and I think perhaps this is where that loneliness is enveloped in this poem too, those feelings, and then also those glory and those brighter moments. And the idea of one, a boy going through his hardships to be able to sit on this chair and to be grandfather, perhaps even passing it, you know, passing it on to an to another child and giving them all those milestones, giving them those stories in which the older person lived, and then the cycle kind of going through it. And I couldn't help but think of my grandmother's chair. One of my mom used to rock us listening to us in her chair, and so it brought a little bit of a nostalgia to me. But, you know, this bringing it into a whole other level of, you know, you live all these different pieces of your life, and then you can actually bring others into it as well, and be, you are the child that was taught by the grandfather, and then you are the grandfather that was taught by the child. And so I thought that was a really cool concept. Really well done.
Excellent comment. Okay. Pretty Bird, we got you, Sky, PM, Pee-wee, and Angel.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to do Pee-wee next? Or?
Sure.
Did you pick one yet, Sky?
Yes, I did. And I pre-read Pee-wee if you need me to. I don't know if Pretty Bird wants to read, but I did pre-read Pee-wee.
Well, Pee-wee's
fine. See, I'm confusing myself, right? Because I had one thought, and then I realized that you know, Sky was still picking, so.
Yeah, no, I'm ready to read Pee-wee if you want me to read, and then so I'm ready.
Yes, please.
If you want me to do that. All right. Truth Unfettered by Pee-wee Cusson. Let pain drift into zephyr winds upon the expanse. Shoes and tucks ready for that limo to the last dance. Separate life, you left me alone, peer within its true. Waste away in my brain, without you, what do I do? Goodbye, honeysuckle dew of yesterday, of interest. Cloven security along with bliss that encompassed. Walking hours to find you alone, searching for home. In stone walls and gargoyles of this room, you atone. Face the facts from upon your throne, a liar's chair. Truth unfettered. You'd never weather or even care. I, of incensed and insecurities, naively inhaled, treacherous tides on the seas of your minds assail. Cool and cold kingdom with insensitivities deceived, lashing inward for absolution, at very least reprieve. Inner thrum and inflammation mucilus of amygdaloid, fear inside mind's eye abducts into malevolent void. Catatonic complacency cloaks of clinging conundrum. Silence overtaking brain rings with a deadly thrum. Goodbye to the silver and lavender fields of hope. Wintertime settled inside. I'm alone. Get me the rope. Thank you.
Get the rope. Oh, man. Yeah, that idea that looms at the end of the rope. I like this that he tried to do as well. There's a familiarity to the topic, I think, so it's easily relatable. And you know, he describes so many things that I think we're all familiar with. It's just wonderfully expressed to you. I enjoyed it very much. I wish I could pick out a better section. Guys, you read it. What did you think?
Yes, I thought it was very stark, and it's especially in the delivery of the last line where, you know, there's this, you know, descends into one's darkness, of course, and especially the idea of gargoyles, you know, turning to stone and having perhaps all feelings turn to stone and becoming a little bit numb in body and soul. And then, you know, this idea where it's to this one, the treacherous tide, and the seas of your soul, of your mind assail, you know, there is, everything's fleeting, and, you know, unfortunately there are instances where one does contemplate such things. Really well done.
Excellent. Chris? Any comments for Pee Wee?
The grass had to go.
Okay.
But he says, thanks for all the beautiful comments and understanding.
That brings us to you.
There is a weight to Pee Wee's poem that is kind of reminds me a little bit of the weight of your poem, Rav, that whole feeling of desolation. And it reminds me of prom, when it starts with, you know, with the shoes and the tux ready for that limo into the last dance. You know, you have, even though I'm sure it could be a wedding or whatever, but for me, when I think limos, I think prom, because I'm just stuck in I was going to say a year, but I will not date myself. But there's something to be said at the promise of a future, at the promise of forever if it's a wedding time, at that promise. And then you get down to the whole goodbye honeysuckle view of yesterday, and you get to face the fact for upon your throne, a liar's chair. And, you know, it is very... kind of a twisted knife, right in the center of trust, and it kind of bleeds you out, you know.
Yeah.
Cool and cold kingdom with insensitive deceit, you know, this whole entire thing. After that wonderful zephyr, the great expanse, ready to go into things. And then at the end of that very first stanza, it's like, you know, you left me alone. Peer within, it's true. Waste away in my brain. Without you, what do I do? When you build a life upon the hope of a future with someone, which I guess wedding vows are, you pin your life to somebody else and their life, and you form this union that you want to forge together, where you grow together, where you grow separately, but also grow together, you know? And sometimes, if you're growing separately, you ain't growing together. And so what happens when one party wants to do what's best for them, and in order to do that, it means the demise of everything you guys do. And is that being true to yourself, or is that being selfish? I mean, but that's a whole other story, but... it's heartbreaking. It is the worst kind of pain to be all in and then have everybody look at you and be like, oh, that's good, but I'm out. It's not okay. And it weighs heavy. And it's as the further he gets, the closer he gets to looking for that rope, the more it weighs. So as you read stanza after stanza after stanza, you have the hope. And then the loneliness in the very next line. Like, this is the beginning and now it's the end. And then it builds, and it builds from a romantic goodbye, honeysuckle dew of yesterday, to you're cold, you're a liar, The catatonic complacency, which I love that phrase because that's kind of like the numbness that we have all, you know, walked through life in for whatever reason at one time or another. That's a perfect picture of that. It's a really worth living this way. And that is a lot to pack into a team. So, as far as loneliness goes, it was lovely.
Excellent. Now, you going to yours next, Sky?
Can I get a break?
Did you get a break?
Actually, I'll do mine because if Pretty Bird is okay,
I'm trying not to make you do like back to back because so whoever reads Angel and then if they do their own poem, it's like, you know, okay, now they're back to back. So
all right, I read Angel and then Sky, you go and then I'll go.
Okay,
that way nobody's back to anything.
Go to go out with a bang.
I don't know about that.
That's the way to do it. Ah, yeah, you do.
you are too kind. Okay, I put Angel up, and I will read her, and then you get yours ready and put it on the board. And, okay. This is Lonely by Heavenly Angel. She's got a quote pinned to the top of it. It says, I can talk to hundreds of people in one day, but none of them compare to the smile you can give me in 1 minute. Isn't that beautiful? That's beautiful. And it goes like this. Well, it's not going to go like this yet because I need my glasses, so give me half a second.
I will read anything and anything you guys want. I really will. Just for future.
Yeah, I'm good.
I just like you to that.
I appreciate that, though.
Okay.
You kicked ass tonight, by the way. So, this is Lonely by Heavenly Angel. It is very gloomy and lonely out today. The sun refuses to shine, and I sit here wondering where you are, how you're doing. You're heavily on my mind. I keep looking out the window, hoping you'll appear. Put a smile on my face. But it's always a show, for deep down inside, there's feelings no one knows. I miss you. I wish you were here right now. And then you would see what exactly you do to me, darling. I miss you so. Life goes by too fast, especially when you're alone. Right home. And home.
Wow. You know, I mean... alleviation of feeling alone, I guess, is idea, I like that you know that she's kind of using the idea of someone like an anchor, like only you can bring me out of it, like you know, when I feel alone, my thoughts turn to you. You know, and it's very much to the quote that you know you read from the beginning. From her, I guess that's her Lucas notes. I like, you know, when you think of how somebody or how you want someone to think of you, that's kind of where I go. And to me, a lot of the fights that some couples have go back to, you know, well, if that's how you think of me, you know, well, maybe I shouldn't be around. And this is the exact opposite of something like that. It's like this is how you prefer to be thought of, how you want to be thought of. It's a beautiful way to put things and a much better way to look at it. It's lovely, Angel. Thank you. Pretty Bird, you read it. What did you think?
There's a sense of longing in this, which I'm a bit, very familiar with. I spent the better part of my marriage with my husband at home most of the time and raising a bunch of kids. And there isn't an anger. There isn't whatever, you know, there's people have a job to do. It is what it is. You sign up for what you sign up for. There's no regret there. But when it was back to back, out of town, out of town, out of town, out of town.
Yeah.
You know, you hope that he'll come home early. You know, you hope that he'll call after a show. You hope that, you know, you get a minute just to connect. And it's heartbreaking and beautiful at the same time, just like this. That whole, I miss you, you know, and that's the whole point. And then the truth is, if you're with somebody that you don't notice when they're gone, well, then it doesn't matter if they come back, you know? So you should miss them, regardless of whether you signed up for it or not. There should be a little sense of loss when the love is there. And to this day, there's a part of me that, you know, if I pull up and the car is there, it's not supposed to be, I still get like little girl excited. Yeah. Like I like do a little jig. I'm like, woohoo! And people look at me like I'm crazy. I'm like, I can't help it. You know, I don't think that I've ever had one of those moments where I'm like, oh, damn it, you know, because, I mean, who wants to come home to that, you know, if that's how you feel seeing somebody that you're supposed to be, you know, in love with, and they're actually home for once, and you get disappointed, but maybe that's not the ticket. But this is a lovely longing. It was just, it brought me right back to, you know, a million years of, you know, I can't sleep till I get that phone call. And as soon as I get that phone call, all is right in the world, and you can sleep like a baby, you know?
Yeah. What'd you think, Scott?
I thought it was well done, and I kept going back to this line, this idea, I put a smile on my face, but it's always a show, for deep down inside, there's feeling no remorse, and I think there's that, that idea. I had just read this, it was a young adult, I know I always say a book, but I really did really read a book, and it was like a young adult boat book. It was geared in poetry. And it was called We All Learn to Smile, or something about smiling. We're all a great smilers. And I think it's so true that we kind of learn to go through the motions and tuck away things so well that you never quite know what's going on underneath someone's face and that pleasantry. And sometimes it's all you can do to get to the day. And, of course, I agree, the longing in this, from another person. And I kind of like the last line, you know, hurry home. Like, it's very, just get here because I'm waiting for you. I thought it was very well done.
Excellent. That puts you up next.
So I picked mine before I read anything. So it just so happens that mine kind of correlates to kind of what Phoebe said, not quite, just like the last line. I will say there is a trigger warning in this poem. I will say that because I think it's important. And I didn't mean to be a rebel, but at the bottom of the poem, it does say you are not alone. It says you are not alone. So, you know, this plays on the idea this is giving to the idea that sometimes loneliness is something if someone has to go or is going through themselves, and it's never about what other people aren't giving. You know, you can't change someone else's emotion, depression, or loneliness. So that's why I picked this one. It's called The Silverware Drawer. Once hope bloomed, now there's a sign. Now there's just a sign that says, caution, sharp object.
Are you going to put it on the board for us?
Oh, I put it. I'm sorry. I put it in the thing. And I didn't get it.
Is it my bad that I not refreshed? There it is. I got it. That's on.
No, I got it.
Oh, you got it. Okay.
I mean, we can both get it.
Sorry.
The Civil War drawer once held spoons. Now there's just a sign, caution, sharp object. At 2 a.m., your dresser drawer was empty, the one in which you threw random bits, shut and thought put away. And when I woke, I wondered if you tired of filling it with silver ink, a printer of quarters spitting out all the things you thought people wanted to buy. Those little lies made of clay foundations, those promises you broke inside yourself. Maybe they weren't broken, but rather stolen. Origami scarecrows folding in on themselves like paper nightmares with sawdust and mache. Words that bore in, dressing themselves in green cloaks, rooting like hemlock trees when night fell. A banquet of self-hate and hidden journals. They were unreadable, those wet foundations of blue, those jukebox wasps parachuting like termites, raining down broken filament lighting. I rarely ever saw those hazel branches reaching out behind glints of pretense, thick like radiant violet acrylic, a toxic zinc that tastes of metal, graffiti in the marmalade of trauma. But I knew of those underground tapestries, those waterlogged caverns full of hieroglyphics, those ventilation shafts you use when triggers would pound like mallets on xylophone keys down the spine of your thoughts. I knew I wasn't one of them. But oh, when those eyes brightened, when those roots gathered back, buried your worries within my soul, I knew that there was no part of your being too broken or too dark for me to love. I think about those moments, when your grief was caught off guard, and your smile was made of something other than fabric. But I think of that morning, when I woke to your dresser drawer empty, when you thought perhaps a few spare things was all you might need, when 5 a.m. was too late to pour the body of your soul back into veins. I threw it away. I threw that one away, but it doesn't matter. Silverware drawer still has a sign that says, caution, sharp object, every time it opens. And
well, yeah, I'm not reading after you.
You've heard you're reading after me.
I had pretty good. Did you want to comment?
Yeah, because I'll cry. All right, fine. Okay. I kind of hate you, but I love you, but I hate you just a little bit. I'm just, you know, putting that out there. Where is it?
In the dresser drawer.
Yeah. Well, not anymore, apparently. Those promises you broke when inside yourself, maybe they weren't broken, but rather stolen. That is so stunning. That is a heartbreaking understanding of people wanting to be better than their brokenness allows them to be. And it's wonderfully insightful, and it is horribly skinless, you know, just kind of raw and naked. Where is it? A banquet of self-hate and hidden journal. They were unreadable. Yeah. I have boxes full of those, and it just gets me. Just like your hope in this gets me. Where is it? Even though you knew of those underground tapestries, those waterlogged caverns full of hieroglyphics, what a beautiful way to say, you know, it's not like you didn't see the baggage. I knew I wasn't wanted then, but oh, when those eyes brightened, you know, you try to not love the things we love about people. But for some of us, the good far outweighs the bad. And even when it sways the other way, you really, really, really want the good to far outweigh the bad still. And so when you get a glimpse of all the goodness that holds your heart, the rest of it falls away until it doesn't. And this is a hard understanding that I'm sure was only realized in the after, not in the during. But it's a beautiful, beautiful, kind outlook on something that is so painful. And, yeah, so anything that I'm going to read after this is ass, so thanks.
It's not. I beg to differ, and thank you very much, Pretty Bird. And I beg to differ.
Yeah, it's a beautiful glimpse into how your mind works. There's a certain brilliance to the silverware, I think, because it makes you think of, like, it's a special occasion. It's Christmas. That's when you pull out the good silverware, and then, you know, everything it kind of goes back to the and the silverware and the object. The way that you use that throughout this is just brilliant. It makes it very, very poignant, like Pretty Bird's been saying, you know. It's so much emotion in you. And it reads like, you know, a lot of times, you know, when you have a family vacation and you are pulling out that's when your emotions are at their peak, like you're describing in this. You have those sensations of cast the cranberries, oh shit, you know, it's in my head, that's the way things seem to work. It's like you're in the middle of the most mundane, this is what's going on, this is an occasion, your stress levels are all elevated and everything else, you're trying to get to something, and you're trying to focus on something, and then all of a sudden it kind of washes over you. I really like this. I think you've before, but, you know, again, it's very representative of loneliness and being alone, and it's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you, Rack. Thank you.
Okay, Pretty Bird. Your ass is up.
FYI, guys, that whole unable to pour the body of your soul back into veins is breaking me, just to let you know. Okay, I'm going to read a poem that I did not put on the list. I'm reading another one. Just because I feel like it.
Awesome.
So it's on the board. This is the weight of isolated air. And it goes like this. The night air is heavy, holding my lungs in regret. It colors the tone of my voice in gravel. All that was beautiful was always twisted, but not every twisted branch holds beauty. Air cooled by moonlight laments the remnants of sun on my skin. For the pain is evident in the color it left behind. Nocturnal emissions of emotional release upon a deaf and blinded world, freedom to feel is cathartic, even in midnight solitude. People awaken to no one, at least faded memories being real in the pieces that still hold emotion. I haven't heard my voice in enough time to question if I can speak at all. Never cared for it much anyway. Crickets and lightning bugs that I never call fireflies amuse me when they visit, feeding like all other joy to be found. Here by the water, night air is heavy, coating my lungs in regret. But I can't remember why. And poem.
Yeah. I'm gonna yell at you for talking about going reading after Sky, but you know, I think Sky will do a better job when it's her time. So I'll let her have that privilege. I love the way your mind works. You got the isolation. It's hard to describe. At least I know it's better than you did anyway. I don't know. I'm gonna end up being tongue-tied. I'm sorry. I love how it amuses you.
The things you
do to my twisted brain to be my brain's twisted enough to begin with, and then you let stuff like this.
Do you know why it amuses me?
I'm sorry.
Do you know why it amuses me?
Not really, but that's okay. I'm just glad that it does.
It does. It's a real quick story. It's because it reminds me of the very first time I popped up on a show that you were on. And so it amuses me because that was years ago.
Yeah, and you still have that effect. The weight of the air on me. Sky, go ahead, yell at her.
Well, now I have to pass right there, right? I feel like, you know, Pretty Bird, I really am a big fan. So flattering as it is, I shall never say, because I am a really huge fan of yours. And I think you should take that at the weight it is, because I really do. I love a lot of poets on here. There are some poets that I read that I'm like, oh, come on. but I would read, and you're one of those. So I think this idea, I mean, this, the whole piece is beautiful. With the opening, well, it's not really the opening, but, you know, there's this one, the beautiful, you know, all that was beautiful was always twisted, and on every twisted branch was the idea of that. And I think you can linger there. And when you're reading poetry, I think it's really important that, one, you feel it, two, you can connect with it, and even if you've never felt those emotions, you feel those emotions anyway. And the fact that when you take lines, you could take them and think about them. You can consume them, you can think about them, and... it brings you to different places, you know. You don't just stay stagnant where you are. You think of all the ways that it could mean, and how it kind of applies to different things. And I love those two lines for that reason. And then there was another, I mean, then of course the freedom to feel is cathartic, even in a midnight solitude, when one is able to expand, right, and fill as much of a room as they want to fill. And sometimes people can make others feel so small where they can't quite do that. And that is a very lonely feeling, to feel like you can't expand. And I really felt that down in this line. Ooh, where was it? It was... I know a line. Where was it? The speaking line where you don't even know what you sound like. Here we go. I haven't heard my voice in enough time to question if I can speak at all or never cared. Speak at all. You've read me, but I never cared quite much anyway. This idea of I haven't heard my voice in enough. My voice enough. And why is that? Why it makes me think of someone being silenced by others or the world enough where they don't even know if they can speak. They feel insecure about it, and they, you know, how loud can you shout if you've been told to be quiet your whole life? And that really struck a chord. You know, I don't know if that's what you meant,
of course, but this is how I'm internalizing it. And the next line, just like that, it's almost like a careless line, but it's not. It's like that self-deprecating line, you know, that joke that I never really cared about it anyway. Well, where is the speaker's self, you know, their self-importance? Where is that, and why is it so belittled? And where, you know, they're even thinking those thoughts. I mean, it's very powerful, I think. And then the last line, of course, I like how you end. You know, endings to me endings to me are very important. And you have a way of ending things, but not really ending things. Like, there's not really any closure, but you still feel that impact of that ending. And I think that's a hard thing to do. I always want to summarize everything, right? I'm bad at that. I just want to summarize everything. And you have a way of just letting it linger, but yet it's still very piercing and then kind of leaving the person still in that emotion. Like, there's no closure. And I think that says something in and of itself, too. And I've been talking for a long time. Excellent poem. And well done. You know, actually, no, when you realize that you've been talking for a very long time, and you're like, okay.
You haven't really been talking okay. That long. It's still another 10 minutes.
Where's Stephen with his button? I really love this button.
Oh,
and
AP is on, and I'll be really
it, and I hope
AP's
I
been on.
It's probably on for my whole 20-minute comment.
Hello, AP. I am so sorry. Were you waiting long?
No, not at all. Pretty bad. I've been sitting at the hospital for two hours getting my foot a boot, new version thereof, so that I don't have to wear my boot all the time now, which is kind of fun. I've got a special.
So this
thing.
Was a good trip to the hospital, if there is such a thing.
It was. It was. I have this sort of shoe with a sort of flappy paddle sort of thing in it, so it's really quite cool.
Well, that's good then.
I think the idea of booting the punishment in Australia is interesting.
Yes. Well, yes. Mind you, I had a nerve conduction test the other week, and I've got to say that's the closest to torture I've had in a long time. Somebody's zapping your hands with electrical current of greater and greater amount, and then they say, and it'd be good if you could relax more. And I'm like, yeah, fun. If I do this to you, you're going to be relaxing? I'd be shocked the next time.
It'd be good if you could relax more.
Yeah, let's go and relax while we actually go and, you know, shock the living proverbial out of you, you know. Fun. You go and relax. You try it. Can I do it on you, by the way? You know, just once?
You're next, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. God save me. Yeah, they need to do a proper bloody review of that testing schedule. Let me tell you, it needs to go through ethics committee. A couple of doctors need to have it done to them badly. Or I'll do it to them. I'll volunteer.
Oh, see, that might be fine.
That's what I'm thinking.
He'll volunteer.
Yeah. So anyway.
Booting punishment? Is it PG-13? I've never heard of it, and I'm interested.
I'm referring to an episode of The Simpsons, where that they actually literally, you know, kick someone in the behind with you know, that as a punishment. That's like, you know,
how
a reprimand.
Yeah. They really do that.
No, they didn't kick me. They just jolted me with 240 volts.
No,
multiple times.
To you. Is that an actual thing that happens in any instance?
Thereof. I'm certainly aware of the as I said, the conductivity nerve test, but no, I'm not aware of the kicking. I'm certainly aware of the jolting.
Okay. Did you bring presents?
So, there you go. Anyway. I'm not sure. Tell me what the topic is, and I'll try. Pretty Bird, you know, I've been long ago because I've been, you know.
It is lonely,
what is the
loneliness,
topic?
Alone.
Lonely. Oh, God. Oh, shit. I'm going to have a look. I don't get lonely that often, I have to say. I'm just sort of too busy sort of talking to people. I know that's really sad, but I am. That's why I've got an all-you-can-eat phone bill, you know. So I can talk to the United States as much as I like because, you know, I mean, I don't have to keep an eye on the clock. Lonely crumbs. Let me have a look. Hold on. Give me a tick.
Yeah, I've looked at my phone and said, I love my phone. All my friends live here.
Right?
Yes. Yes. Hold on. Let me plug it. It's absolutely pouring with rain for the record.
I mean, if you have something on the joys of being alone, that'll work too.
Yeah, no, I'm looking.
Because there is something to be said for some me time, for a two-hour bath and no children.
Yeah.
I'm just putting that out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Be able to read whenever you want, because you're single. Someone said,
"Aren't
you
my favorite
being
book?"
Single? I said, "I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if I am or not. I get to do whatever I want, whenever I want, and I get to read and I get to have my alone time. In fact, I have to push myself to do other things with other people." So yeah.
And you've been doing very well.
Well, along the lines of what you wrote in your poem, Pretty Bird, you know, people, some of us, you know, they have conversations with themselves. Such that they don't feel so alone.
Well, to be honest with you, for someone who's single, I'm not alone very often. People coming out everywhere.
I have one.
Put it up.
It has the word lonely in it. I've got it up.
It's a lonely poem.
It's a quatern. Are you ready?
Yes, just put it on the wall and let us read it.
Some people can describe their marriage in two words. I describe it in a quatern. This is on Plen's Flourish, and it goes a little bit like this.
Wait.
With a twirl of ink.
Is it on? Oh, got there it. It is. Okay, sorry. My computer is lagging. I just got it. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. Here we go. Try this. With a swirl of ink and a flourish of the pen decades ago when into marriage too flung. Recall the excitement within the union when friends stood to teeming rain as music sung. Parker Silver Arrows signed the certificate among with a swirl of ink and a flourish of the pen. A simple document plain with a thick strung held a promise of words ahead back then. Decades of children, houses to friends ten, lies spawned upon pearls one day signed with a swirl of ink and a flourish of the pen, lonely a piece of paper of their inside. By innocence forgotten, drowned that vine, the fallen the rains and brackish rust pen. Caught papers, the dull force left underlined, the swirl of ink, and a flourish of pen. End poem.
Is that flourish of the pen? Oh my God, that I love that idea. And yeah, you know, to commit something, you know, to you know, law, I guess, or, you know, to the rest of the world with, you know, to that statement, that idea of the flourish of the pen. I love that idea that it kind of brings it into reality, brings the thought into reality with the flourish of a pen. Yeah. It's reducing something so complex to, you know, I guess a black and white agreement, which you know you're supposed to adhere to, and you can't, I mean the idea of not being able to pick those words apart, that they're supposed to be so concise and clear, like this is what it means, it is almost a joke to me, because you know we deal with words all the time, and you know that I know what I'm trying to say, but I don't know what you understood. You know, that sticks out to me more than anything. You know, and I've mocked the idea of, you know, when, especially in marriage, when you say forever, it's like, well, forever passed by pretty quickly, you know. It's
it does get by. You're right.
Yeah. And to put that to paper and say, you know, that this is indelible, this is forever, and then sign it, and then, you know, in the next breath, you're signing a document that says the exact opposite. And this is really very, very poignant, AP. Thank you for that. I liked it very much.
Pleasure.
Pretty bird.
Ah, well, this is like a lifetime, isn't it? You start with the singing of music in the rain, and there's something, the way you wrote Flourish of the Pen, I mean, it to me is like, you know, it's that wonderful flailing signature that with a smile, like, now it's official, and it's fabulous. And by the end of this, it is anything but. And it is, it's lovely. And the form you chose to write this in with that repetition just kind of, it almost blocks out time, you know, the beginning, the middle, and the end. And I love that. It's like, you know, you've got your marriage license, you've got your mortgage, you've got your divorce certificate, end of story, but it's never the end of the story, and it's never the whole story. And these are the little kind of bullet points of a life. And in that aspect, it is heartbreaking. I mean, it's lovely, but there's sorrow there, you know? And and you've got the I love that you use brackets, because that's my favorite salty word. And it's heartbreaking. And it's really just beautifully written.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Sky.
I thought this was a beautiful metaphor, of course, and with this, it's so tangible as well, because it's talking about the physicality of it, with the swirl of the ink and the flourish of the pen, the idea of something being so neat and orderly, and has this signature just written down in black and white, and how opposite that really is, how there's these a decade of a relationship of, particularly I like to define friendship, teeming rain as music sung. I particularly love that line. And then the idea of, you know, these initials being strong, and the idea of quote unquote, I guess I would say closure, but not really. It's almost like an opposition of and of itself, and I really liked that about it. Really well done.
Yeah. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
Excellent piece. You have a show coming up, AP?
Yes, we've got the normal Saturday night show with Hatter and Deb and myself. And we are on the topic of peaches, obviously.
Last one.
Peaches do. Peaches even good, but peaches are even better.
That's fantastic. All right, you brought the evening to a close. We went through everything, and I just want to thank everybody who took the time to hang out, participate on the board, even if you didn't write, just listen and download the show. You know, I hope you enjoy it. I had a great time. And, you know, look for us on allpoetry.com. And, you know, thank you, AP Foundation and AP himself. I'm not going to try and name everybody individually. Just that, thank you. I guess I'm done.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Rack.
Hey, Bert.
Oh, I love the show, and
checking
I like
her
talking.
Email.
And you did. My kid is away, and like 400 miles away from me, and apparently he's like trading
like Slim Jims, like their cigarettes in jail because he's a bunch of other kids. And he's like, I got all this stuff before Slim Jims. I'm like, how the heck did you talk people into that?
Yeah, what if I wasn't done commenting on Pretty Bird's poem?
You were?
It's a joke. No one's laughing. No, I was.
Okay. No, I'm concerned. That's a valid concern. I would be concerned if you weren't done. I thought I read the cue perfectly. It was okay.
It was the cue. I'm just kidding. A wonderful show, Rack. I love your ideas. I really do. And I'm so glad that I got to stay. And look, it's like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yay. Well,
oh,
not in Oz it isn't.
Oh, it's, what time are you?
It's tomorrow.
It's midnight
over there.
How many hours away are you, AP? 13? Oh, he's not even on anymore. I'm talking to nobody. It's fine.
Yeah, I said thank you, and he probably hung up when I said thank you.
I'm telling you, working on half screens and not seeing the whole studio is really killing me.
How come only half screen?
Because my computer took a crap. So I'm on a Chromebook, so I'm on my little mini-me version instead of my two giant screens with all the fixings.
Oh, and I'm like yelling at you to check your email. I'm not helpful.
I did. I just saw, and she looks just like her daddy.
She's on the air mattress.
I don't know how she
sleeps through me hooting and hollering. The lights are all on. I don't know how she does it. She fell asleep like 10 minutes before Fern Gully. I was worried she wasn't going to be asleep. She stayed up late. I'm like, you've got to fall asleep by 10. You got to fall asleep by 10. I'm thinking this in my head. Okay, call the show. And then we're watching the Fern Gully, and the song came on when they're like all like dancing around, and it's like, the fall is this. Knocked right out. Yes! Threw her in there, and I made it.
You are awesome.
I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry that you
don't ever apologize for being enthusiastic, woman.
Yeah, okay. Oh, it's not 1 o'clock. It's 12 o'clock.
Yes.
You're right. Sorry.
It's all time zones.
Oh my goodness. We're all in the same time zone though. It's okay.
That's what I thought. That's why when you guys said it was 12 and I really thought it was 1, I was confused. But then I figured it out on my own, so it's okay. It's fine.
You cracked me up.
I haven't been drinking, I promise. All right, well, thank you so much.
Well,
thank
I'm so glad that you made it for the whole show, and I like you on vacation.
I know, yeah.
You get to hang out.
It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a pleasure to be here. I love it.
Thank you for using Glove Talk Radio.
Yes.
Night.
Good night.